Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau, and I'm your host. You can find me at joyfulvegan.com and ColleenPatrickGoudreau.com. You can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And of course, I encourage you to subscribe to Food for Thought at iTunes or Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying this free podcast called Food for Thought, I hope you're inspired to share it with others and leave ratings and reviews. Of course, to help keep it going, this is a 100% listener-supported podcast, so I hope you consider becoming a supporter, a patron, specifically at patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGoudreau. Thank you so much in advance to all of my supporters. Without your support, I would have to go work for someone else and not be able to do this work. So I can't impress upon you enough that the reason I'm able to do this work is because of you. So if you do value it, please go to patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGoudreau. Check out the perks and choose a monthly level that's right for you. Today's topic is vegan on Vancouver Island and London, Ontario. It's the year of Canada for me. I'll explain more. Hello, everybody. First and foremost, exciting news. The Joyful Vegan, my seventh book, is officially out. It's all about how to navigate the social, cultural, and emotional aspects of living vegan in a non-vegan world. It's already number one in the animal rights category on Amazon. It's available in paperback, ebook, and audiobook, which is very interesting. I thought I was going to have to go do some edits after I recorded the audiobook, but apparently I didn't have to. So grab your copy today in one of those formats. And once you have it, I cannot impress upon you enough, that reviews help so much in this digital age. So if you could leave a review on Amazon and or Goodreads, I would be so grateful. Just want to remind you also that for our South of France trip coming up in June 2020, it's only 6 months away at this recording. It is going to be a magical trip to the South of France. You can see everything about this trip at cpgtrips.com. We also have space for our Botswana 2020 to 2021 trip. I am hosting the Botswana 2020 and my partners, Brighty and Seb, will be there for the one that goes over New Year's after the first one. I won't be on that trip, but I can assure you, having been to Botswana and knowing what Brighty and Seb are capable of, it's going to be an incredible trip. So if you missed out on signing up with me for the Botswana trip, for the CPG trip, please don't miss out on joining World Vegan Travel for the second Botswana trip. I can assure you it's going to be incredible. So all of that is at cpgtrips.com. So around the time I embarked upon a bit of a book tour when the book came out, which is just right around this time, I also made plans to celebrate my wedding anniversary with my husband. We had talked for many years about going up to Vancouver Island, and so we just decided to do it. We went back and forth about flying up to Seattle and taking the ferry over to the island, or flying up to Vancouver and taking the ferry over to the island. But in the end, we decided it was just easier to fly right into Victoria, the capital of British Columbia, which we did after a quick layover in Vancouver, and start our journey there. We only had a few days. So once we knew our overall plan, it was time to start creating the itinerary and deciding exactly where we wanted to stay, both in terms of the towns we wanted to stay in, but also in terms of the specific accommodations. We had decided to stay in Victoria the first night we were there and the last night we were there. And then the other two nights we would be up in Ucluelet. We thought at first we were going to stay in Tofino, a little waterfront town on the peninsula at the tip of the island. But in the end, Ucluelet made more sense for us, and we're pretty thrilled with our decision. So at first we started looking at Airbnbs because, well, I like to have a little kitchen. I don't like to eat out. I want to say I because David, he's fine eating out more than I am. But I really like to have a little kitchen, which is why I like to have an Airbnb. But we weren't finding anything that jumped out at us. And so we started looking at proper bed and breakfasts. And as we did, we found many more options. And it really just reminded me of how we used to travel many moons ago when we lived in New Jersey and we took a lot of weekend trips to New England. I don't know if you remember this, but for a time I was working as an editor for a travel publication. And so I was lucky enough to get a lot of free rooms at a lot of beautiful accommodations and bed and breakfasts and boutique hotels and such. I think I mentioned this in my animology episode, the one that I did on falconry, because at one of these hotels, these historic hotels, there was a falconry school. Anyway, more on that if you're interested in the animology podcast and the episode specifically on falconry. So it was just fun to book rooms at traditional bed and breakfast where breakfast is made for you and the accommodations tend to be charming and lovely. So that's what we did. And our trip was starting to come together. And so we picked a bed and breakfast in Victoria for our first night there, a bed and breakfast in Ucluelet for the next two nights, and a bed and breakfast back in Victoria for the last night. And we found out that the first bed and breakfast in Victoria, which offered a traditional afternoon tea to guests and to visitors, also offered a vegan traditional afternoon tea. And not only the bed and breakfast that we stayed at, but also the Fairmont Empress Hotel in Victoria also serves an afternoon tea and also has a vegan menu. How cool is that? So we had limited time to do both, but in the end, we did one. So we picked our accommodations. I'll get back to that. We made the reservations. And then it was my job to reach out to the proprietors of each bed and breakfast. I mean, one was technically a hotel, I suppose, but they had a full breakfast to let them know that we are vegan. And of course, in that email, I invite them, this is how I always do it, to ask me any questions they have about accommodating us as vegans. And this is when also we asked about reserving the vegan tea at the bed and breakfast, the Pendray Inn and Tea House. And each of the proprietors wrote back very quickly. Pendray obviously said it was no problem because they already had the vegan tea menu. But from Snug Harbor Inn, where we were staying in Ucluelet, this is what I received back. This is why you cannot be afraid of asking for what you want. Doing it in a gracious way will always get back a gracious response. And so this is what I heard back. Thanks for touching base and giving us the heads up of your vegan diet. I do have a few veganized recipes up my sleeve, so rest assured you will be well fed for breakfast. I always enjoy the challenge of coming up with something new to add to my menu, so I may take this opportunity to have you as my taste testers. Do you prefer sweet or savory breakfast? My regular breakfast usually consists of both. We typically start off with fruit smoothies and a fresh baked scone and granola, fruit parfait, followed by a warm dish. My homemade granola is vegan and gluten-free, and I pair it with coconut yogurt for my vegan guests. I also have a great vegan scone recipe that I'll make while you're here. For the savory, I love experimenting with Benedict variations and tofu scrambles. And then she also asked about me bringing my cookbooks, which of course in the end I'm not able to do. It's too much to travel with my cookbooks. But I just so appreciated her response, which was incredibly enthusiastic. And then from the Abigail, which was the bed and breakfast we were staying in Victoria when we were coming back from Ucluelet, said, "Wonderful, what a great way to celebrate your anniversary. Thank you for letting us know." They said dietary restrictions, which I did write back. And I always make a pun that says they're not restrictions. It's quite abundant. But they said that our chef would be sure to have some vegan options for you for breakfast and appetizers. So stay tuned. I will let you know what these breakfasts were like. I do talk to so many people who think traveling as a vegan is difficult and inconvenient. But often when I ask them what the interaction with the bed and breakfast proprietors is like, they often admit that they don't ever ask for what they want because they don't want to be a pain. They don't want to put someone out. They don't want to make someone else feel they have to go out of their way to make something special just for them. And so when I look at that, that has nothing to do with being vegan or traveling. It has everything to do with asking for what you want. And of course, as I said, doing it graciously and doing it gratefully, but definitely asking for what you want, especially to folks in service industries, in the hotel, restaurant, bed and breakfast, accommodations, industries. This is what they do. They're service industries. I've been vegan for 20 years, and I could probably count on one hand the number of times that I've been told I couldn't be accommodated or who just, weren't that enthusiastic about it. But I honestly can't even think of more than just a couple. And that's over a 20-year period, and probably even more than that, because when I was vegetarian, I was also asking for vegetarian breakfast. So I would say 25 years or so. I've never had a problem. And that's like, this is what they do. Like, you have to keep that in mind when you're reaching out to folks. They love hosting people, especially people at bed and breakfast. Making their guests happy makes them happy. So if it helps, look at it that way. You're denying someone else the chance to be happy if you don't ask them for what you want so that they can give you what you want and thus be happy. I'm only being half facetious. I quite literally mean it. Because first of all, if you don't tell them and then you come down for breakfast and you accept only toast and jam and then say, well, it's okay, I'm vegan, I didn't want to put you out, they will feel terrible that you didn't tell them in advance. They want to treat you. It's one of the reasons they run such establishments. You're not putting them out. That's what they expect. And of course, you can couch it the way I did, which is by saying in the same breath, of you being vegan, that you're happy to help answer any questions they have, or you can provide any recipes they might need. So it can be done in a very kind way, obviously. And I guarantee you will be met with kindness in return. That has been my experience. Now, we'll come back to breakfast. But one thing we knew for sure was that there are a number of plant-based restaurants in Victoria. And it was our anniversary weekend, and we were looking for something special. And so we landed on Bee Love, and we made a reservation for 7 p.m. So around 5 p.m., we left the Pendray to walk around the harbor a bit and have a drink at the Fairmont Empress, which overlooks the harbor. They actually had lots of little plant-based bites on their menu, and we had a couple, including some really nice hummus and pickled vegetables. And then we made our way to Bee Love, which was really perfect. It's a really warm, cozy, welcoming atmosphere, and the food was really delicious. We weren't starving, but we did have, I had the mac and cheese with vegetables, which was delicious. It was a cashew-based cheese. And David had the soup and salad, which were also very good. I just can't remember exactly what they were. We did not get dessert, but it was a lovely place. I highly recommend it. They also featured all of the local farms and vendors they work with, which I really appreciated. So a really lovely place in Victoria. The next morning, we decided to venture out for a walk before our tea at the Pendray and before checkout. And in the end, we didn't have breakfast at the Pendray because we had made reservations for the vegan tea at 11 a.m. And then we had to head out right away to make our way to Ucluelet. And crazy though it sounds, I didn't want breakfast and then brunch within a couple hours of each other. So it was the right choice because we had a lovely walk to and around Beacon Hill Park. It was fall, so it was chilly there, but it was perfect. It was perfect fall weather. The leaves were still at their peak. Some had already fallen, but orange and red and yellow and green leaves shone on every tree. And the park itself, with its little pond and bridges, was just absolutely beautiful. Now, interestingly, there are peacocks roaming freely in the park, which is a bit of an anomaly considering, well, peacocks aren't exactly native to Victoria, British Columbia. And so I dug a little deeper, and indeed they are remnants of an animal menagerie of a zoo that once dominated the park. The zoo was opened in the late 19th century in 1889, and it slowly dwindled down to essentially close in the 1990s. According to records I found, the first animals, oh my God, there's so many animals, were 6 deer, a bear, a wolf, sheep, an eagle, 2 young swans, and pheasants. Added next were a seal, 2 black bear cubs, a rock pheasant, and a bird of freedom, which apparently is a bald eagle. During the following 100 years of zoo history, a huge range of animals were displayed. Bears, beaver, boars, buffaloes, coyotes, deer, lynx, monkeys, mountain goats, sheep, moose, porcupine, wolves, rabbits, raccoons, seals, rats, and guinea pigs. Captive birds included bald eagles, hawks, owls, cranes, swans, pheasants, ducks, geese, peafowl. We'll come back to peafowl. Vultures, falcons, turkeys, quail, cockatoos, pigeons, jays, and magpies, all captive. There are no records of training of animal, any training of like handling the animals for the keepers of these animals. And most of them lived in squalid, depressing conditions for most of their lives. Deer, as I said, were among the first animals placed in the 1889 zoo. And deer were the last to leave the park in 1990. Deer were the only mammals continuously held captive in the park for over 100 years. Two young mute swans, I read, were among the first captive birds in the park by July 1889. And of course, over time, when they bred, and they obviously grew in population, the birds' wings were clipped so they couldn't fly away. But I kind of loved reading that once they stopped pinioning the birds, which is where what it's called when you cut the tendons that hinder flying, in order to hinder flying, you cut the tendons, the birds, every young swan, every one of them, every one flew out of the park. So they left. They were like, thank you. Now I have my wings. I can get out of here. Their descendants can now be seen actually in several saltwater locations in the area, but not in the park. And that brings us to the peacocks. The first peacock in Beacon Hill Park was purchased in 1891. And while there are no more swans or pheasants in the park, an estimated 35 blue Indian peafowl, remember, peacock is the male and peahen is the female, live free. So 35 are still there. Now, according to BeaconHillHistory.org, though the peafowl, the peacocks and the peahens, are not confined, the parks department provides food and water for them in an open fenced area behind the children's petting farm. So they have run of the whole park, but they can go to this one area and there's food and water for them. And the fenced area also provides protection, apparently, for their eggs and their young, because if they want to nest there, they will find protection because dogs and raccoons and human activity destroys most of the nests and the eggs and the young outside the fenced area. So that probably explains the population decline. So sadly, animals languished in this park for decades. Many got sick. Many died after suffering for many years due to many factors. They were captive. B, they were not cared for properly. And C, many, like the bears in the pits, lived in dark, dank enclosures, well, pits. And D, they weren't fed diets conducive to their species. According to these records, bread and milk mixed with boiled rice was the staple diet for numerous species in most zoos. The daily ration for the captive elephant was 80 pounds of bread, 12 pints of wine, and 2 bucketfuls of gruel. That's probably oats and some grains. Fruit, for some reason, was actually considered unsuitable for monkeys, so monkeys didn't get any fruit. As the years passed, more of Victoria's population became convinced it was inappropriate to hold large mammals in small cages, thank goodness. In 1907, in fact, a petition was signed and presented to the mayor. This is 1907, demanding better conditions. Numbers of mammals in captivity in the park began declining in the 1920s and 1930s and dipped further in the 1960s and 70s. So the animals were dying and they weren't replenishing the population, thank goodness. And then toward the end, I mean, there were still like rabbits and guinea pigs and other small mammals in cages. You know, the public kind of accepted them, but the larger wild animals luckily began to fall out of favor. There was a park administrator there from 1931 to 1970, the same man. He focused on exotic birds, and so he brought in a lot of pheasants and cranes and quail and ducks and other birds. It was a very common occurrence to trade exotic birds with Seattle and Tacoma and Vancouver and Calgary, so other parts of Canada. In 1973, the children's farmyard officially opened, and from 1973 to 1985, it was completely run by park staff. So at this point today, the only captives in the park are these animals in the little farmyard, in the petting zoo, the children's petting zoo, and it's open seasonally. So thankfully, public opinion turned, as it continues to, and the people of Victoria became less tolerant of seeing animals in captivity. And even though there's still a small petting zoo, thank goodness most of the animals are gone. And I assume the petting zoo consists mostly of domesticated animals, not wild animals. And so that explains the peafowl, remnants of a sad past. And so with that, I will say that it is a beautiful place. And I do recommend walking around Beacon Hill Park if you ever find yourself in Victoria, and if you see the peacocks, now you know the history. So we started making our way back to Pendray House for our afternoon tea. And it being in the middle of the week and off season, we were the only ones in the parlor for the tea, which was fine by us. They brought over the menu, and indeed one of the featured teas to choose from was the vegan tea. Now, you've been hearing me talk more and more about when the word vegan can be a negative thing and how I'm inclined towards using plant-based for food and vegan for people. And the data continue to bear this out. In The Joyful Vegan, in my new book, I talk about the research that reveals that restaurants would do better to A, I know this is going to kill some of you vegans listening, A, not to have a separate vegan menu, even though we love when we show up and there's a separate menu of items for us to choose from, it means that non-vegans are not going to choose the plant-based options. There's a perception that it's just for the vegans, right? The menu is just for the vegans. The food items are just for the vegans, right? So, and I mean, it's psychological. I'm not saying it's logical, but it's what people kind of think. And so they're not going to ask for the, non-vegans are not going to ask for the vegan menu. They're not going to do it. So I'm perfectly happy not being catered to in this sense. I know what to look for on a menu. I don't need a separate menu. And so this is what the research is showing, that restaurants would do better to not have a separate vegan menu. And when I say do better, I mean those items will be bought and ordered by non-vegans and vegans, and that's what we want. Number two, don't call the items vegan. Rather, just call them what they are and use a key to indicate if they're meat-free or plant-based or dairy-free, however you want to talk about it. You can see a little V. You can use a little plant symbol. A lot of them are doing that now. Just whatever the key is. But don't call the items vegan, especially saying just, you know, vegan cake and vegan burrito and vegan cashew cheese. Like, just don't say vegan before every menu item. Just call it what it is. Lentil soup. Mac and cheese, whatever, right? And then, you know, or cashew mac and cheese, just so at least you know that it's not dairy, but don't call it vegan. C, use plant-based instead of vegan. More and more research is indicating that people associate vegan with ideology, and so they don't identify with that ideology, and so they're turned off by the word vegan. Now, again, I'm talking about menus and food items and food labels. I'm not talking specifically about the word in general. And I unpack this a bit in The Joyful Vegan. The point is, there, people are inclined to choose the meat-free or dairy-free or plant-based option, but they tend not to if it's called vegan. So I think this is something we need to consider more in our own advocacy and just in our own framing of things. I talked about that in the last Compassion in Action conference, and I will be talking about it in the Joyful Vegan online worldwide conference, which we've moved to February. I was too overwhelmed with the release of the Joyful Vegan to focus on the conference that was originally scheduled for November 2019. But you will be happy to know that if you have not signed up for this conference, and I really hope you will. We've got people from all around the world signed up for this conference. It's online, so you can join from wherever you are. We're doing so now at the end of February. It's actually kind of cool because it's on. It's a leap year next year, 2020. So it's actually on February 29th. It's not a mistake when you see that date. So go to joyfulvegan.com/conference. You can just go to joyfulvegan.com and you can see a link to that conference. And you can find all the details, but we'll be talking more about language and framing and advocacy, etc. Now, I say all of this because they went to great lengths, Pendray, to make some fantastic items, but I can promise you that non-vegans are not going to choose these items. This really is a topic for its own episode, and I, as I said, I do talk about it in The Joyful Vegan, but I'm just so interested in framing. I was talking to Lauren Kuby. She works at the Sustainability School at Arizona State University in Tempe, and she's on the city council. She's vice mayor. She hosted me again at ASU and Changing Hands Bookstore to speak just recently. And she was telling me about an event where I think it was a food line that said carbon intense food or something like that, right? In other words, indicating that the animal meat options were responsible for more carbon emissions into the environment. And so just call it that. Now, no one wants to be associated with doing something wrong, especially with carbon emissions. They want to perceive themselves as doing something that doesn't cause harm. And so it definitely makes people stop and think and make hopefully a different choice. I think It's like how we're now saying landfill for garbage bins rather than just trash or garbage. So I'm encouraged by that. And I'm always just thinking of how we can use language that's going to be more accurate and draw the largest number of people in. So even though we were excited to see vegan tea advertised for both the Pendray Inn and the Fairmont Empress that I mentioned, what are other words they could have used that would have alerted us to the fact that it was suitable for us, for vegans, but also have the potential to inspire someone who's not vegan to order it? I would love to hear your thoughts, because I think this is really worth brainstorming. This is really worth thinking about. So on one hand, I will say that I'm always curious to know what can be done to accommodate me. So even if I don't see a vegan tea on a menu that I know is an afternoon tea or you know, like just at a regular non-vegan place, I'm curious, I'd be inclined to ask if they could or would have options for me. But that aside, I'm just thinking of ways they could have framed the tea to indicate that the items are plant-based without saying vegan. So plant-based tea, maybe? I don't know if it has the right ring to it, because for the most part, we're talking about little sandwiches and patisserie. We're not talking about, you know, salads. And maybe when people hear plant-based tea, they're confused. Right? I don't know. You don't want to say healthy tea. You don't want to say cholesterol-free tea. You don't want to say anything that has to do with the items being healthier. I know that's terrible, but the research really shows that even though people know they have to make healthier options when they're out eating out, if a menu says healthy or heart healthy or something like that, people won't choose it because they're inclined to associate heart healthy or healthy with something that doesn't taste good. So for a tea, I don't know. Animal-friendly, earth-friendly tea, eco-friendly tea. I don't know. Can't say green tea because that just means green tea. So I don't know. I'd love to hear your thoughts, right? What are other words being used in that world, the sustainability world? Climate-friendly tea, that just doesn't sound appealing. Sustainable tea, I don't know. I want to hear what you have to say. Maybe plant-based is good enough. Maybe in this case, vegan is good enough as calling it vegan tea. Although, like I said, I just don't think non-vegans are going to choose it. So back to the tea. It was lovely. I've put up photos on the page for today's episode at ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com, and you can see the tiered tray of food items, both savory and sweet. It started with tea sandwiches featuring a little flag for me, cucumber and vegan cream cheese on rye. Now, I know it's vegan cream cheese because it's on the vegan menu. Okay, I'm going to stop with that. But luckily, the rest of the items, they don't say vegan for every other item. So cucumber and cream cheese on rye. That was one little sandwich. There was a caprese and multigrain with cashew mozzarella. I'm reading to you exactly what it says on the menu. That's how to do it. Just call it cashew mozzarella. Call it caprese. Let people figure it out. Cashew mozzarella. There was a hummus and grilled Mediterranean vegetable sandwich. There was tofu and mixed vegetable turnover in savory curry. Again, really, that's the right way to do it. The next little menu was freshly baked scones. So again, we know that we were in the vegan menu, so you don't have to say vegan. So we had an Earl Grey scone and a pumpkin scone served with holiday spiced coconut butter and house-made triple berry jam. Perfect. Both were delicious. Then there was the signature pastries section. And on that menu was carrot cake, apple cinnamon mini parcel with maple syrup, and chocolate layered cake. All lovely. And see, they didn't have to name everything on the menu as vegan, just the cream cheese. So maybe I'll reach out to them and talk to that. But it's a good example of not overusing the word vegan. And I say this because the most egregious example I have ever seen of overusing the word vegan on a menu was when I went to London, Ontario, just a couple weeks after I was on Vancouver Island to speak at the London Veg Fest. And my friend Jennifer picked me up from the airport in Toronto, and we headed up to Cambridge to meet her mom for dinner and to drop off her doggy with her parents so that they could take care of Margot, her doggy, while we spent the night and the next day up in London. So we went to this restaurant right on the freeway called Beer Town. It's a proper sports bar with sports bar food and more TV screens than I've ever seen in one place. Not a place where you'd expect them catering to vegans, but it turns out that not long ago, they added a separate vegan menu, which is fabulous in the sense that they have all of these fantastic items, but I need to talk to them about this. And as packed as that menu was with options, And as much as non-vegans would, of course, love all the food items, and in fact, some ladies were at the table next to us, they were coveting the dish we got. We had a lettuce wraps, and I could see them coveting the lettuce wraps. Non-vegans are not going to look at the separate vegan menu. They're not going to ask for it. They're not going to look at it. They're not going to ask for it, and they're not going to look at it, period. They're just not, because it's compartmentalized and it's categorized as different, right, as different from the regular menu and just for vegans. So that was already a pet peeve, but fine. It is what it is. And honestly, they had so many options, which was fantastic. But oh my God, it was kind of hilarious, because it was almost like a joke on me, because I talk about this all the time. And my friend Jennifer knew this already, where we see the vegan menu and I was like, that's great. I'm really happy there really is a vegan menu. Like, obviously I'm happy about that. But we open the menu, and I'm really not exaggerating. You can actually go online and see that. If you just type in Beer Town in Cambridge, in Ontario, every single menu item says the word vegan in front of it. Now, mind you, this is the vegan menu. The menu is called the vegan gluten-free menu. And as such, there's no need to put the word vegan in front of every single menu item. So I really encourage you to go. Here it is, beertown.ca/food. Everything looked really delicious. We got the lettuce wraps, like I said, and I believe I got the cauliflower, buffalo cauliflower, because that's where I get wherever I go, what I get wherever I go. And everything was delicious, but there is no need to say vegan before each menu item. Here's just an example of a couple of the items. So again, extensive menu, super fantastic. But here you go. So, okay, there's the vegan friendly. It's called vegan friendly online. Vegan guac and chips. Vegan DIY meatless mahogany chicken lettuce wraps. Chicken with the apostrophe N. That's fine. If they just said DIY meatless mahogany chicken lettuce wraps, perfect, right? Perfect. Guac and chips. You don't need to put vegan in front of it. Vegan truffle rosemary fries, vegan sweet potato fries, vegan faux taco, vegan classic nachos, vegan kale and blueberry salad, vegan Caesar salad, vegan Beer Town pad thai, vegan grilled tea. I mean, literally, vegan super salad, vegan Yucatan bowl, vegan Asian bowl, vegan burger, vegan standard, vegan. You get the idea. It was a little much. It was a little overkill. You don't have to do that. And I need to reach out to both of them, Pendre and Beer Town. But if you do go to the Fairmont Empress Tea, I want to know how it was. We didn't get to go to that one, but I would have loved to have gone there too. But we can't just eat our way through cities. There are other things we want to do. So after our tea, we began our drive up to Ucluelet that we figured would take about 5 hours. It took about 4.5. And the last half was just beautiful. In fact, we had some traffic because they were doing some road construction. So I think in the end, it was probably 4.5, 5. But it was just beautiful. One of the places we stopped on the way is called Cathedral Grove or Cathedral Trail, which is part of McMillan Provincial Park. And it was absolutely magical. I love this time of year. I love the fall so much. I love when the light is really low and it glows and it's just golden. It's just incredible. And one of the things that makes this little grove so special is that it's home to some of the largest Douglas fir and red cedar trees in Canada. And some of these trees are as old as 800 years old. They survived a fire a long time ago, and somehow they survived the lumber industry. I'm not really sure how. And I have photos up on my website of the oldest tree in the forest there, which is about 800 years old. Like, that's just amazing. So it was incredible. And then we just kept heading up to our bed and breakfast. It's called the Snug Harbor Inn in Ucluelet. And it was absolutely beautiful. The most incredible views from our room of this little cove that the bed and breakfast sits on. That's right on the Pacific. So this little cove and then the Pacific Ocean. I highly recommend staying here if you're ever on Vancouver Island and if you stay in Ucluelet. Like I said, we did a bunch of research. At first, we thought we were going to stay in Tofino, but now having been to both places, I'm really glad we stayed in Ucluelet. It just feels more wooded and more forested still. Tofino was cute. I'm not someone who needs to live near the water. I need to live near trees. And Ucluelet had both. But where we were by the water was surrounded by trees. Tofino is adorable, and it's more of a harbor town. So it just was more open and more about the sea rather than about the forest for me. There were probably parts of Tofino I didn't see. I'm sure there were, actually. But we are really happy we stayed in Euclulet, and that's what I would recommend. We arrived at our bed and breakfast when the sun was setting, and so we really enjoyed a beautiful sunset over the Pacific. And this time of year, I recommend also, but I'm sure it's beautiful any time of year. So for that night, for dinner that night, we went to a little pizza place in the middle, I want to say in the middle of town, even though town is an overstatement. It's one road with a few stores on it, but it was really cute. And so we ordered two pizzas. We took leftovers back to our place, which served us really well the next day. But I'm not someone who needs to have non-dairy cheese. I don't know. I've just been eating pizzas without any kind of cheese for so long that that's what I prefer. But they did have Daya, which was lovely. So David got one with Daya. I got one without, and lots of vegetables and arugula, which made me very happy. So the next morning we woke up, and as I said, the proprietor was very excited to make us breakfast to accommodate us. She's the one who wrote that long email and asked me to bring my cookbooks. She had a delicious fruit smoothie for us. She had fresh fruit, and she had waffles. She had used a non-vegan recipe and just veganized it. And she asked me what I thought. I mean, we were talking about it. The waffle was good, but it was pretty dense because she had just removed whatever egg was called for and she didn't put anything back in. My waffles in the Joy of Vegan Baking, I think, are really good. And I've been told they are because they're a lot lighter. And I told her that she would do well to just use some kind of egg in there, like a flax egg or a couple flax eggs or some other ways to just lighten them up. But it's very sweet, really delicious smoothie. I was very happy about that. And the next day she made a Benedict indeed with a portobello mushroom she didn't use any kind of scramble or egg replacement. But it was good. It was good. And again, we had the smoothie and I was happy for that. So our plan for that day was to just hike like pretty much all day. And one of the best parts about staying at Snug Harbor, aside from how beautiful it was, is that you can get right onto the Wild Pacific Trail pretty much from the front door. I mean, you have to walk about a quarter mile to the trail, but it was perfect to be able to just walk from there. Now, the Wild Pacific Trail is divided into three sections. There's the Lighthouse Loop, the Big Beach section, and then Brown's Beach to Ancient Cedars. And so we did the Lighthouse Loop in one stint, and then we did Brown's Beach to Ancient Cedars. Now, we weren't going to do it all at once, so we had to drive to the Lighthouse Loop, and we started there and just walked around there, which was just stunning. I can't say that enough. It was just beautiful. So you can see pictures at ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com for today's episode. Now, being in the wild makes me happier than anything else. As I said, I'm a forest sprite. So anytime I can be around trees and among trees and inside a forest is what makes me happy, along with seeing wildlife. That's all I care about. So we were there in early November, just at the end of the season when whales migrate south. So we didn't book any whale watching tours, although other times of the year you can do so, and I would recommend it. And I know people who have done them on Vancouver Island in these areas, and they said they were just incredible. One thing you can also do is go bear sighting from a boat. So it's kind of bear watching from a boat, because you just go up against the shore and you can see the bears near the shore because they're fishing. And I think you get these from Tofino. So I didn't do these. We didn't do these. So I can't speak to them specifically. But I my friend Jennifer, who I said was with me in Toronto, she had just been on Vancouver Island and she had done a whale watching tour. But they also brought them over to the coast, to the shore, where they hoped to see bears. But she didn't see any bears. But she saw wolves. And she said it was incredible. And I can't even imagine, because I've never seen wolves in the wild. I've only seen them in sanctuaries, as we will see them in Alsace this year, like we did last year at the Bear and Wolf Sanctuary in the Black Forest in Germany. And I can't even imagine what that was like. She said it was unbelievable. And there were babies. There were babies, baby cubs, baby wolves, and baby wolves, whatever they're called, cubs, and babies. They saw from the boat baby wolves. So that sounds pretty cool. So we didn't get to experience that, but that's okay. We did hear about a way to possibly see bears near where we were in Euclulet, near where a little inlet and creek juts out from the Pacific, and where bears go to eat salmon. So as we were making our way there, I started to understand better why this is a place where bears went, and why they were able to get salmon there, and why people would be able to see the bears. And it's because it was a salmon hatchery. So as soon as I heard that, I was worried, you know, we were on our way, it wasn't far away. And I was worried, of course, that there would be some kind of artificial situation where the bears were lured into the hatchery for the viewing pleasure of humans. But I wasn't sure. And I wanted to see for myself. I really just wanted to have an informed opinion about this place. I'd also never seen a salmon hatchery, so I was curious about seeing that for myself as well. So we arrived at the hatchery, and other cars were parked there. You walk from the lot to a gate, which is essentially the entrance to the hatchery. And from there, there's a viewing platform, and then the creek below. And that, indeed, you could see leads right out to the Pacific. Now, I was reluctant and very watchful and very mindful and trying to be objective because I didn't, of course, want to support anything that was exploitative. And so we entered and closed the gate behind us. And there was probably about a half a dozen people, maybe a few more, maybe eight people. And they were quietly watching something below. And they whispered to us and they pointed that there was a bear below. And indeed, there was a black bear, to be precise, who was searching for salmon in the creek and found one that he carried off and began to eat. Some of you may have seen that on my social media. On Instagram. I didn't want to talk about the details of it because I wanted to talk about it here. And so here I am. So the folks who were watching the bear were enthralled. They were taking lots of video and photos. And I was gratified that everyone was respectful. They were very quiet, except for the sound of the frickin' camera shutter that went off like a million times a minute. You know, there are cameras that have silent mode for shutters or silent shutters. So that's something to consider if you like taking wildlife photography. It's obviously for wildlife viewing, not to have a shutter going off. So that was the only thing that was kind of annoying. But other than that, everyone was very respectful and very watchful and very quiet. And I myself, of course, was enthralled. I'd never seen a black bear in the wild. And in the end, I was pleased, and I wouldn't have gone in otherwise, that the hatchery, they didn't charge anything. They didn't take money from any visitors as an entry fee of some kind to view the bears. If they had, I wouldn't have gone in. Just, we wouldn't have gone in. I was also happy that everyone there, like I said, was respectful. They were quiet. They were intent on watching the bears, and they weren't loud. They were afraid to scare them away. Now, I'm sure that depends on the individuals who were there at any given moment. And I'm sure if children were there, it would have been a very different story. But I was satisfied that people seemed to be really respectful and no one was luring the bears. Like, there was nothing like that. The bear just walked on over the rocks from the shoreline, you know, came up to, you know, check out the salmon. And no one, no one from the hatchery was even there. Like, it wasn't contrived. It was very organic. So it didn't feel like anybody was exploiting the bears or trying to gain anything from their presence. I was surprised, however, that only a sign on the gate as you exited warned you to go to your car right away. That was the only precaution they asked you to take in an area where bears are all around. So that was irresponsible. You know, this is a place where people come to see the bears, and that felt a little like, okay. But then again, like I said, they're just a hatchery and people come because they want to see the bears, and they built a little platform to do that in a gated area. So I don't know. I would encourage you to go yourself if you'd like to get a sense of it yourself up in Ucluelet. Would I recommend it? I don't know if I would recommend it. I'm still chewing on it. But I don't think there was anything particularly harmful to the bears. That was my assessment. David thought the same thing for the salmon. However, that's a different story altogether for a different podcast. So if you are interested in wildlife viewing, that is something I always encourage you to do first. If you're going somewhere where there's wildlife, do your due diligence. Find a reputable outfit that doesn't get too close to wildlife, whether it's the aquatic animals you're seeing or the land mammals you're seeing. Just be mindful of anything that might disrupt their normal behaviors. Now, I'm glad today that industries exist that allow for wildlife viewing, that they make money for the region they're in versus the days of yore when the majority of the money in those regions came from hunting the whales, usually for their fat and their meat, and the otters for their skins and their pelts. I mean, otters were almost completely wiped out on the West Coast. So I would take wildlife viewing any day as long as it's done responsibly. For more of my opinions on this, you can check out the podcast episodes. There are two of them in particular you might be interested in. One's called Wildlife Tourism in Rwanda, and one's called Avoiding Animal Cruelty While Traveling. It was in Thailand in particular, but really just in general. So we drove back to Snug Harbor, we ate the rest of our pizza, and then we headed out our front door for a long hike on the rest of the Wild Pacific Trail. And this was the section from the beach to the ancient cedars. And it was about 5 miles round trip. It wasn't too bad. It wasn't long at all. Like we had to get there from the inn. So that was like added about a half a mile in both directions together. And it was very sweet because as soon as we stepped out our front door, there was a little young deer, a little baby deer, grazing right outside the door. Sadly, it was on an empty lot that was up for sale. There's been a lot of development up in New Clulet and that whole region, I'm sure the whole island, because it's become very popular. There are a lot of retirees there. And so unfortunately, there were a lot of empty lots for sale that wildlife live on now, but that will be developed soon, no doubt, with houses and hotels and condos. So that's a bummer, but we did see a little deer and he was very sweet. Needless to say, the trail itself, just along and above the Pacific coast, especially in the fall when the light is low and golden, was stunning. Probably a favorite hike, top 10 for sure. It was really beautiful. And then for dinner that night, we headed to Tofino, where we planned to eat at the little waterfront town's only vegan restaurant, Bravocados. It features an extensive menu of burgers and bites and bowls and salads. And to start with, of course, I couldn't help but order the buffalo cauliflower. That's what I get wherever I go. And the Caesar salad, because that's where I get wherever I go. But also a burger, actually. The Caesar salad was my side I got instead of French fries, but I had to try the Caesar because that's what I do wherever I go. Like my barometers for a menu are Caesar salads and buffalo cauliflower. I've been doing the Caesar salad for decades because that's just what I love. And so I love that there are more and more plant-based Caesar salads, egg-free. And if you look at my Caesar salad in the vegan table, I talk about the history of the Caesar salad. So you're gonna have to check that out. So the Caesar salad was really so good that I actually ordered it the next day for my entree because we went back for lunch the next day. I didn't see it on the menu when we were there. I probably just didn't notice it. But my friend Jennifer, again, she said she'd ordered the fish and chips at Bravocados, and she said it was the best thing she's ever had. That reminded her of the flaky white fish that she, you know, enjoyed before she became vegan. And you know what it was made from? Banana blossoms. What? I am intrigued. I have had plant-based fish and chips, mostly from tofu. I have never had banana blossoms. I looked online and they very much look like artichoke hearts. So, and I imagine artichoke hearts would work fairly well as well. But I don't tend to deep fry food, but I'm going to try my hand at fish and chips with banana blossoms, breading them and just baking them. Stay tuned. And I, again, want to know if you've ever cooked with banana blossoms. I'm intrigued. So our last day before heading back to Victoria, where we would spend our last night, after lunch, we spent a little time walking around Tofino. It's very small, so we didn't spend too much time. And then we headed to, there's a little distillery there and a brewery on the way out of town. So we had a little gin flight. And then we started our drive back to Victoria. Now, our plan was to eat dinner at an Italian restaurant back in Victoria. As I said, this was our wedding anniversary weekend. So we were looking for just a nice special place. But by the time we were driving back, this is why social media can be so helpful. I had heard from an Instagram follower that there was a new vegan restaurant in a little town. I don't know if it's little, but little relative to Oakland, for instance, called Nanaimo. That's the town. And that's about an hour north of Victoria. So it was on our way, and the restaurant is called Eve Olive, and we figured it's new. It looked really lovely. We wanted something special. And of course, we wanted to celebrate our anniversary and we wanted to support a vegan restaurant. So we decided to cancel our reservations at the Italian place in Victoria and take our chances that we'd be able to get a table at Eve Olive. Being off season again and relatively new, we had no problem getting a table. It's a lovely place. It's a kind of bistro type restaurant. Has a few kinks to work out, but nothing major. In the end, it was a lovely experience. We enjoyed our food very much. We had the cheese plate to start, featuring nut-based cheeses from a local cheesemaker, from a local vegan cheesemaker. We had olives, sweet potato ravioli, pasta Alfredo, and I could have sworn we ordered buffalo cauliflower. I'm sure we did. But you can order anything on their menu as tapas or entree size. So that was kind of nice. Like everything is either tapas size or entree size. And so we were really glad to go there and to support them before we headed back to Victoria. And we arrived kind of late. So we just went right to our hotel, called it a night. Plus, this entire anniversary trip, I was dealing with an inflamed right eye that I thought was originally pink eye, but which turned out to be just inflammation with some long name that's apparently some rare condition, whatever. As I write this and record this, I'm still recovering. I actually have one lens in, but at least the eye drops I'm now using are working, but it's been weeks. It's been weeks, and I can't wait to wear my contact lens again and just go back to normal. It has not been fun dealing with eye pain. So we just got back, you know, we went back to the hotel and I just tried watching a movie and went to sleep. But the next morning we went to eat breakfast, and that was our plan, to eat breakfast, check out, and then go to Bouchard Gardens, if that's how you pronounce it, on the way to the airport. And that's exactly what we did. It was really lovely because this hotel, the Abigail, totally came through on the breakfast. So you go down, it's a hotel, but you know, it has its own little dining area. But I have to say, both the Pendray House and the Abigail both felt a little dated. I'd stay somewhere else in Victoria, and I don't have a recommendation right now because I didn't love the places. They were centrally located, but I didn't love them. Whereas, as I said, the Snug Harbor Inn in Ucluelet was unbelievable. So we went downstairs. Everyone's eating. I could smell bacon. I could smell sausage. And they handed us our own vegan menu, which in this case I was happy about. Here I am complaining about vegan menus. But in this case, it was lovely. And we had a choice. We had a blueberry muffin. We had fresh fruit. And then we had a choice of tofu scramble or pancakes and something else. I think there was something else too. I think there was some kind of Mexican bean salsa thing. And they even had vegan sausage, which was lovely. So we had breakfast. We headed to the gardens, which I have to say were incredible. I recommend them. It's $40 a person, but I think it's worth it. I like supporting those kinds of things. Just for the Japanese garden alone and the sunken garden, worth it. We didn't have a lot of time to spend because we had to get to the airport, but I'm glad we went. And it was a wonderful time. It was really good to just travel together again. It felt really like the olden days when we used to do this together before we started doing trips with 27 people or 20 people, or even with Bridie and Seb, who we love. I know you're listening, Bridie and Seb. Possibly. Because Seb has spent time, they've both spent time on Vancouver Island. Seb's from the Toronto area. Aren't you from, where are you from? Ontario or something like that? Where are you from? It's not Ontario. Is it? I'm blanking on where you're from. I just lost it. But anyway, Seb's from Canada and his parents live in Vancouver. So I know they've spent time on Vancouver Island, really loved it. But it was just nice to be together alone and just kind of have this really romantic trip. So lots to do there, especially if you like the outdoors. Highly recommend it. I've been to Canada 3 times this year. Vancouver Island, Toronto, and then London, Ontario. And then last year I was in Winnipeg. It's like the year of the Canada for me. After coming back from Vancouver Island, like I said, I headed to Toronto, and as I mentioned, we went to Beer Town. There was lots in London. I was quite impressed. The Veg Fest was lovely. I'm grateful to everyone who came out. It was lovely to meet so many podcast listeners and book readers and followers. Just absolutely lovely. We had drinks with Barry and Allison, who have become friends. They came with us to Rwanda. Rwanda won, and they are coming with us to Botswana, which, by the way, there is space available, as I said, not on the CPG trip that I'm going to be on, but right afterwards, Bridie and Seb are going to be hosting this trip, and lots of people who've been on trips with us in the past are going on that one, and we still have space available for our south of France, so I hope you can join me for that, but we got to see them. That's what happens. We become friends with a lot of the people who travel with us, and it was good to see them. Unfortunately, our trip back to Toronto got delayed, because apparently London was having their annual Christmas parade that night, and they didn't bother to block off parking lots before the parade started, so we couldn't leave the parking lot until the parade was over. So it was pretty annoying at first because it was already getting late, but then it was kind of funny that we literally couldn't leave this lot because we were surrounded by a parade, so it was kind of funny. But we got back to Toronto around 10:30, and then the next day we had brunch at Planta Yorkville in Toronto, which was absolutely adorable. Absolutely loved it. I want more places like this in Oakland. Please, somebody open more restaurants like this in Oakland. What is happening? Jennifer had pancakes. I had tofu scramble and, of course, buffalo cauliflower. We walked around Yorkville and admired the trees and the houses. And then I made my way to the airport. So it was really lovely. I had an incredible time. And I say all this to you, not because I'm like bragging about my trip, but I'm saying this to you always to instill in you ideas and suggestions for abundance when you travel. Of course, you will experience abundance when you travel with me on CPG trips, but you can experience abundance when you travel alone or on a romantic getaway or just with friends and family. So I hope the suggestions help for you in general when you're making your plans for your getaways. And I hope it helps if you're planning a trip to Vancouver Island or London, Ontario, or a bit in Toronto. So thanks, everyone. I, again, appreciate you so much. Thank you for your support. Thank you for supporting the book. The Joyful Vegan is now available wherever books are sold. If you're coming to the book launch party in November in Oakland, I will see you soon. If you are inclined, please join the conference that is worldwide online in February 2020. You can go to joyfulvegan.com for the animals. This is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. Thanks for listening.